Welcome to another edition of Vetted by Mark Vetter. And today we have the incredible experience to talk to Courtney Bach. She is a library information technology specialist with the Meade School District, among about five other things. I'm wondering how she has time for a life. So this is going to be an interesting episode, talking to the actual worker bees, the people who are doing the leading, doing the working, doing the touching, doing the building with AI and education. So Courtney, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you came to Meade and where you are today.
Yeah, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. It's a privilege to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity to have a chat with you. I'm going into my 15th year of education. I started in full-day kindergarten at the beginning of my career in Spokane Public Schools, and as a 22-year-old, not knowing what I was doing and trying the very best I could, and had a great experience, and then got the opportunity after a couple years of doing that to jump into a tech startup in Spokane called NextIT. And I was a natural language model analyst for them for a couple years. And in hindsight, I didn't realize what the scale of what I was doing then, but it was AI, and I was doing basically machine learning by hand. I don't know how else to describe it. Like, that's the best way I can describe it. But we worked on customer service chatbots for people, for companies. And one of my biggest projects I worked on was Alaska Airlines, Ask Jen. She was one of my favorites. So I had the AI background then. I didn't even realize it until I went back to the classroom, and then this last couple of years, all that's kind of come together with AI just exploding, and then the education piece coming in. And as I dove into learning, making sure I could learn everything I could about AI, because I was just captivated by it. I was like, the first time I used ChatGPT, my jaw was on the floor. I was like, this is going to change everything. And I kind of realized like what I was doing with NextIT, and then all the stuff with education, and it all came together. And I was like, oh, wow, this is pretty amazing. So I've been with Meade School District for the last 4 years. And this coming year, actually, I'm going to be doing part-time library and technology specialist. And then I'm also going to be doing part-time digital literacy coordinator, I believe is going to be my title. So I'm going to be doing our digital literacy and AI literacy for the district. So writing all of that stuff. So it's pretty exciting.
Okay, I want to dive in right there because that's something that's one of my pet peeves. So Meade is investing in an expert in AI to lead the district. That's what you're telling me?
Yes.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I worry. I talk to lots of districts with 20, 25,000 kids who have not a single expert. They want everybody to learn AI. But really to lead and the speed at which this is developing, you need one expert, though. That is your life, right? Yeah. So you get to lead that role. So will you also lead professional development within Meade?
I think that'll be once we get all of the groundwork in place. Yes, I'm anticipating that being part of it too. It's a real big passion of mine that I am advocating for hard. And that's the plan. So it's very important for us to be supporting our teachers.
Have you already put together policies around the use of AI and data privacy and privacy agreements?
Yes, they're in a draft form, and we'll be getting all that stuff going. I've got to get some more eyes on it from the district. We'll run it through the school board and superintendent and all of that stuff. So yeah, the drafts are done. They just need more eyes and more editing. And we're using OSPI as kind of our foundation to go with that, because they've released some stuff for us, which is great because not every state has done that. And then tapping into some other resources that are out there to make sure that we've got a really nice policy going.
Will you be using multiple AI agents, or are you purchasing one that you're working through? How are you dealing with the whole data privacy issue?
Those discussions haven't quite got, those are on the table to be discussed. And I think once we get this groundwork going, those discussions are going to be next. The district is super excited to have teachers using it. They know it's the future, and what needs to happen. And we've got, teachers having students use it, and having those policies in place are really going to give us that go ahead to do something with in a more formal level. We have ChatGPT blocked for students right now. Teachers have full access to it. I'll be interested to see how it all plays out with Google's release of stuff for the classroom, because we're a G Suite district. Students have access to School AI and Magic School on the student side, because it passed. We used Ed Frameworks to evaluate safety and privacy for students. So those are the two sites that students have access to at the moment. But I anticipate that's going to be a changing and evolving conversation as things evolve and change. And we've talked a lot about how we're going to have conversations in December that we didn't even imagine that we can have, that we're having now. You know, like there's no way we can anticipate, with the speed of AI going as fast as it is, you know, what's going to be happening in December. So all those conversations are happening, which is good. I'm glad they're happening. I'm glad that, you know, we're not just sticking our head in the sand and pretending it doesn't exist.
I can remember 27 months ago, I did a very quick AI presentation in CCE, and yeah, people were in the audience for the very first time hitting ChatGPT and developing lesson plans. And it was, oh my God, this is going to change the world. And we're here. It's today.
Yeah, it is.
So your job with the district resides on the curriculum side or on the technology side of the district?
Both. It's kind of I see it as kind of the integration of the liaison between both of those things. So I've got people on the tech side that I get to work with, and then I get to work with teaching and learning as well. So I'm kind of bridging between the two, which is a really great challenge for me in my professional career. I'm excited to bridge those relationships, because I bring like the technology side and the knowledge there. And I'm not saying that I know everything there is to know about the technology side, but I have the background and I have the knowledge, and then having the education and the teaching side to that as well. So we can kind of bring those two things together, because sometimes when you get stuck in, when you're, you know, all teaching and learning are all technology, you don't necessarily have the crossover skills to, or the experience and to bridge those two things together. So it's going to be me.
So how do you think AI is going to change a teacher's daily life?
I have like a really optimistic view of AI, and not to like ignore the things that are scary about it. But in my optimistic view, I see that AI gives teachers more time to do the things we actually love to do with teaching. So it gets rid of all of that, or not gets rid of, but just streamlines all of those administrative tasks that take a long time, that aren't necessarily very hard, but then we can get to making those connections with students, which is what really matters. Being more present in the classroom, not thinking about all the stuff we have to do during our prep. If we have to bring things home, I don't want to bring things home anymore. And AI helps do that. It helps me be more present with my family, helps me be more present with my students. So I see it in a really optimistic way from a teacher standpoint in that way. I also see it from a student standpoint that it's going to help students be better learners. They can access those. Like if their teacher sets up a tutoring chat bot, which I think is amazing, because sometimes when those kids are working late at night, they don't have an adult at home, or it's 10:30 at night and they can't call their teacher and they're trying to figure out their homework or their paper or their math, and they need some help, and they don't have a person that's present there for them. So I think AI can help in that capacity. And that's just one small way that I think we can change education for students as well.
So our initial step, our initial foray into AI, what I hear you saying, is going to be that replacement cycle, right? Replacing tedious work with AI, replacing and supporting things that we already do, basically, right? We do tutoring, sometimes we have tutoring services. So more efficient and effective, is that the initial step?
Yeah, that's what I think. And I don't see it as ever replacing teachers, because you can't do that. But I think it makes us more efficient and effective. It's funny that the technology piece to me can enhance the human connection side of things. And that's really where I see AI going. And I in my own personal life. I want to see AI do some of those things that consume my time so that I can actually go do the things that I love to do, like be with my family, be with my horses, travel, all that stuff. I see AI doing that for me already in a smaller way. And I'm hoping that the positive side of that gets to teachers as well. And I do want to emphasize not replacing teachers, because we can't replace teachers. You can't replace that human connection, but just making us more efficient and more effective educators.
A few weeks ago, I was actually in your neck of the woods over at Post Falls and with the teacher sitting on the water, and I was asking her about AI, and she is not a techie. Okay. She's not a techie. But as we discussed it, her dream would that AI would allow her to use universal design to truly develop lesson plans to meet all needs or differentiate the lesson plans based upon IEPs, 504s, and gifted plans.
Yeah.
Have you thought about that process at all?
Yeah. And I think that's a really great way to utilize AI and to personalize education. I know that gets tossed around there a lot too. And it's such an amazing thing. I mean, we're already doing it, right? We can do it with the AI tools that are out there, and we can. And it's stuff, that's another example of things that teachers are already doing already, right? We're already personalizing education or, you know, things for individual students, but it takes forever. It takes a long time to gather those resources for that struggling student, or to pull resources and create plans for your highly capable students, which, in the state of Washington, we're required to serve them too. And so it's the time that it takes to do that. The AI really helps us be more efficient and designing those units and those lessons that are going to meet the needs of every single learner in a way that's not making teachers, you know, work till 5 o'clock every night.
So let's put on your tech hat now. So if I'm a teacher and I want to create a universal design lesson plan for eighth grade natural science, the data has to be available. The assessment data has to be available to the agent, right? The IEPs have to be, the 504 has to be, the gifted plan has to be available. So is your tech department working on that data warehouse so that all that data is owned by the district and not by the various vendors who maybe are doing those assessments?
You know, I don't know the specifics of what my district is doing with that. Those are conversations that are going to be happening here shortly. But that is one thing that I worry about. And how do we manage that? Are we keeping the data? Is the company keeping the data? Like, what does that look like? Do teachers know what's okay, what data and things are okay to put into AI and what are not? And I think that's part of the education piece for educators that needs to come in. It does, but that is something that concerns me and is on the top of my list of things to make sure that we've got locked in for our students so we can protect their privacy and protect teacher privacy as well.
And as the chatbots get to know you, I use Copilot daily on every device I have. Okay. I'll talk to Copilot in my truck as I'm driving. It now it starts saying, so how's the weather in Summit today? It'll start asking me questions based because it's starting to gain that knowledge of me, right?
Yeah.
That chatbot friend is there almost. And our students are going to have that availability at some point. The amount of data known about that student when they transfer state to state is going to be a little scary because every state has different laws, right? And students come from being comfortable finding information is different in different states. With your teacher hat, your kid-centered hat, how big of a concern is that for you? Is it such a big concern that we should limit AI usage until that's resolved?
You know, as my teacher hat and my mom hat comes on, and it does concern me. It's with some of the weird, scary things that are out there with AI, especially with children, it freaks me out. It scares me. It makes me worried. I don't think a full on ban for, you know, kids under the age of 18 or 16 or whatever is the right answer, because I think that's just putting our head in the sand and ignoring a problem that is also an amazing thing. Cause I kind of think of it like the same thing with the internet too. Like, we can't not let kids 100% on the internet. So I think when we're talking about kids using AI, it needs to be done in a really controlled way. Like, I would not turn students out onto ChatGPT. I've said it for a long time. It's like, it's the Wild West of AI. We have no way to monitor it for students. We have no way to see what they're doing. There's no guardrails. There's nothing in place. But when we are working with students with AI, and what we can control in the educational setting, right? We can't control everything. But when we are using AI with students, we need to be using it in a way that's controlled, that in we can monitor, we can see chats, it's logged, we have the information, and then they only have access to what teachers allow them to have access to in a really controlled environment, so they can interact with it in a safe manner and in a way that they can learn and they can be better at it, because at some point they need to learn that prompt engineering skill too, right? We have to teach them about AI. They have to have the AI literacy so that they can be productive and good citizens and have great opportunities for jobs, because every job is going to involve it in the future in some capacity. I mean, there's going to be just such a call for it, and there already is. So we got to find that balance and make sure that kids are learning it, but that they're learning it in a really safe way.
A Microsoft friend posted a quote the other day, work less, think more using AI.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, we always think of AI as making us lazy. Kids are going to be lazy. They're just going to look up the answer. But how do we design the lessons, and how do we design the assessments to make sure they're thinking more using the tools available to them?
You know, I've heard that quote too, people saying things like that, and that and also that AI is going to make them lazy. I think it's the opposite. I think it's students are going to have more critical thinking skills, because we know that there's so much AI out there. They're going to be like, no, wait a second. Is this AI? Is this true? Do I have to, like, is this really good information? And I think that's a great opportunity to be like, this is what I got first. Let me go double check with different sources. Let me go look at this. Let me go look at this. Let me pull this. And I think we can design assignments and assessments around those where AI is part of it, and we know that we're using it, but it's not the thing that does it for us at the end. So I would argue that AI can actually make our students more critical thinkers. And I think it's made me a more critical thinker, because as I'm going through and using ChatGPT to just have as a thought partner, I'm like, oh, well, okay, that's a great idea, but I also like this way. And what about this way? And just going back and forth. So I think it can make our kids even better critical thinkers. I think it's a great opportunity to do that.
So using, you know, your G Suite district, or using Teams if you're Microsoft district, mm-hmm. using those devices with an AI chatbot to evaluate students' problem solving. Have you thought about that?
You mean like looking at like how they're interacting and then using AI to see how they're interacting? Is that what you mean?
When one of the classes I taught back in the day, there's a term for you. Back in the day was an eighth grade gifted class. And I'd throw a problem, is U.S. history, and I'd throw a problem into basically the middle of the floor and say, now working together, solve this problem. Mm-hmm. Figure out what this design, why the Conestoga was designed the way it was designed. And I would grade them on their collaboration efforts and their research efforts and running to the library to solve the problem I gave them. Because to me, that was gifted education. Well, now with, I'll pick on Teams, it can recognize each student's voice. The chatbot can see who's being collaborative and who's taking credit and who's doing these different things, right? It can mm-hmm. actually measure the research they're doing on their device. And we can grade on those soft skills that our employers want so desperately.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we can get there, or is that a pipe dream?
I think we can get there, but I don't think that teachers should just rely on all that AI data for grading students. I think it's one component of what they're doing, but I think that the teacher discernment and the knowledge of the teacher has to be a factor there too. So I think it's both.
And when you're working with teachers, did a lot of professional development technology the last 6-8 years of my career, and teachers are difficult to get to change because they grew up in a 900 square foot classroom looking at the front of the room, sitting in straight rows, and that's what they liked. And now they're a teacher, so they don't understand why maybe we need something different. It's not a negative. It's just that's their experience.
Mm-hmm.
Getting teachers to dip their toes in, to begin the change cycle, to become the innovators? What are your techniques for that?
When I'm doing professional development, I always give teachers time to play. And I try to give them like little tasks to get them started. Like, here's an idea. If you're an elementary teacher, try this. If you're a secondary teacher, try this. And I always emphasize, like, if that doesn't resonate with you or you go down a rabbit hole somewhere, like, follow the rabbit hole and just enjoy it and do it in this professional development environment where you have some support from me, you have support from colleagues that are here to lift you up, support you, and help you think in different ways. And I always make sure that we have a chance for educators to share at the end, because some of the best ideas are coming from other people. Every single time I do a PD, somebody comes up and is like, hey, can AI do this? And I'm like, well, let's see. And it's always something I never would have thought of. And I always tell teachers, especially the ones that are the most resistant, to just pick one thing and try it. Just you don't have to do every search and every LLM. You don't have to do everything. You don't have to try all the different tools. You can just pick one thing to try. So a good story for this is there was a teacher at my school, and she's like, Courtney, all this AI stuff, she's like, I think it's really cool, but it's overwhelming to me. It's too much. And I said, well, let's just pick one thing. And what is one thing in your day that consumes a massive amount of your time that you would like to see streamlined? And she goes, oh, then we have this student, and I have to send an email home every day to his parents because of his behavior plan. And I have to, it takes me like 30 minutes to write this email. And I'm like, we got this. We can do this with AI. So we did it once. I said, just take everything that happened today. Don't worry about it being fancy or formal. Just type it in to, she was using Magic School. She typed it in and it rewrote it for her in a professional way. And she was like, this has saved me so much time. And that's all she uses AI for. That's it. That's the only thing she does. But she's so happy that she's not staying 30 to 40 minutes after contract time writing this email every single day to this parent. So that's a small thing, but for her, it made a huge difference.
So let's switch from the optimistic view to the negative view. You're way younger than I am. I'm just saying, right? I was there when we had the first dial-up at Beloit Junior High in Puyallup, and everybody was scared to death to be on the internet with, I think it was Netscape. I can't remember what browser we used.
So I
right? And we're not going to know how to use the library anymore, because now we can just look up papers. We get all those great fears. Then Google came about and we just thought it was going to make everybody lazy. Libraries are going to go away. All those big fears again. Is history just repeating itself with AI?
With the fears? I think so. Yes. I don't think libraries are going away. People, you know, as someone who does, you know, is a librarian for elementary students, kids still love having the book, and I teach them how to library. Like, we learn the Dewey Decimal System. Like, y'all gotta find this stuff. Like, but no, I remember that too. I remember dial up. I remember, as a student, we had the computer lab and, the colored Macs with all the, you know, the big ones. I loved those. I thought those were the coolest. And, we played Kids Picks and Oregon Trail. Alphas, and you know, you didn't want to die of dysentery. That was the thing. And so, no, I don't think libraries are going to go away. People love books. People love reading. And I know that the physical books stores are going away, but Amazon's doing just fine with selling of books. The New York Times bestsellers list is not going away. Students, my Harry Potter, I can't keep it on the shelves because the kids, I've got two copies of the whole series and they're constantly checked out. And any graphic novels, all that stuff, the kids still love it. And I do too. I love a physical book. When I'm traveling, I want the book. I like the idea of being able to take what I've been reading and run it through ChatGPT and have it like apply it to my life when I'm doing some self-help stuff or like just some on my own learning for my own professional or personal development. I'm reading a book right now called Essentialism, and I've been running that through ChatGPT, some of the ideas, because it has all that knowledge, right? So I can take this hard copy and be like, hey, you know, here's taking what you know about me and my life, because ChatGPT and I have become fairly close and well acquainted, you know, and running it through that essentialist viewpoint. How can I do X, Y, and Z, or what can? So it's like this bridge, this marriage between the two. That's super interesting to me, and kind of going back to that critical thinking really challenges me in a different way. And I can have that conversation with an intelligent thing that knows what I'm talking about. I don't have to re-explain the book. I don't have to pester my husband about it either.
What's your greatest fear, single greatest negative that you think could come about with public education and AI?
One, just picking one. There's a couple, but my biggest fear is the use of data to target students in really negative, awful, awful ways. You know, we see that with social media, with the impact that that's had on students, and it's a huge, huge issue. And that, I mean, that's all data too, right? The kids, they've got their phones and they're constantly on, you know, TikTok and Instagram and Facebook. And so I see the things from that, then how it affects students' mental well-being, and then how it affects their physical well-being and their social well-being. So my biggest concern is that AI is going to even amplify that more. That's my biggest fear. And I hope that we can do something about it, because we're having these conversations are happening where we didn't have those conversations with social media, because we knew but we didn't know. Like, it was like we should have known, right? We should have known, but we didn't. So I'm there's a glimmer of hope because the conversations like this one are happening all over the place with AI.
So for me, my greatest fear is districts are facing funding challenges, specifically in the state of Washington, nationally, with the federal funds being withheld, with the funding cliff from COVID, with all the technology that must be refreshed that was purchased during the COVID rush. There are huge funding challenges going on right now. The state of Washington, education is at its lowest percentage of the total state budget since the McCleary decision. So if districts go to free AI agents, that data, everything that's free, you're selling something. When I put my data into let's say ChatGPT, mm-hmm. I'm selling bits of myself, right?
Yes.
We can't afford, in many cases, the paid services, either the Microsoft licensing, although now you can get Copilot Chat for free for your students. Gemini is for adults, not yet for kids. And there's a cost for all that. Mm-hmm. So my fear, personally, is that districts won't use a tunneled, data-centric or privacy-centric chatbot for their students, and that data then is being sold. And what that data will know about you as a student can, like you said, you can be victimized. Yep. And not only victimized by your fellow students or by hackers, but by the vendors who are buying the data.
That plays into kind of what I was saying too. I totally agree with you.
Yeah. So how do you and I as educators, of course, we're going to advocate with our school board members and things like that, right? Mm-hmm. But I believe in AI. I believe we need to be training our students in it because it is the next job skill. But I'm also so wary of putting my kids into AI if we're not ready with it.
I agree with you 100%. I think the first thing that needs to happen is, because I don't think every school board, superintendent, district leader knows what you just said. I don't think they understand that if it's free, that doesn't mean it's good. That means that they're giving something, right? They're selling, just like what you said. So I think the education piece is the first part of that. And I think once people realize what's actually happening, the data is the new currency, that hopefully that it'll spark them to be like, okay, we need to do better. Because when you know better, you should do better, right? Hopefully, in theory. So in the funding is an issue, and funding in education is always an issue. You know, I hope with the new mandate from the current administration about AI. I hope there's funding that happens. I hope it is. I hope that that comes through, but we'll see. You know, you can have an executive order, but we'll see if there's any teeth into it. It actually does anything. It would be great if it did, if we supported this initiative that we want students and teachers and school districts to have. I think it's great to be ambitious, but we also need to back it with money because districts can't afford it.
Well, speaking of that particular executive order, it actually dictated that we work with for-profit organizations because it wasn't backed with money.
Right.
Which leads us down this rabbit hole of selling our children.
Right. So, I mean, my optimistic view is like, oh, they'll just give us money and fund it like they fund all these things and it'll be great. But no, there's ties and it's never that simple, and it's never what's best for students, right? It's not when it comes to that piece of it. And that, you know, that's a political conversation I could talk about for a while. I wanted to be optimistic, but I also know in reality that that's not always the case. So, I mean, we live in a capitalist society. I understand that people have to make money, and companies and organizations need to pay their people. They need to make money and do their things. But I think we can do that in ways that are safe. And there are companies out there that are doing things with integrity, for the good of students and for teachers. And I hope those companies shine through and want and really rise to the top. And it's not just the big guys who I know are just, they just want to make the money and they want your data.
So I'm going to leave this subject just with that statement, because you and I totally agree. And I think that for every tech director listening and every curriculum director listening, data privacy agreements, understanding where your student data is housed, how it's accessed, is critical.
Yeah.
And so many people, I once had a member of a large corporation board tell me, Vetter, privacy is dead. Get over it. And this was a large organization that's in every single school district in the world. Mm. And it scared me to death.
Yeah.
So channeled vendors, you know, be it Microsoft, be it Magic School, be it, you know, any other vendor who has a channeled student data privacy, where the data is not being used for training, where the data is not being held, where the data is not being retained, is not being reviewed by humans in many cases. We really need to think about those things. And so that's a great place to leave it.
Yeah.
Now, the last 30 seconds, look at your LinkedIn. You teach mounted shooting off of a horse. Are you crazy?
A little bit. That's like my little adrenaline rush.
Do you compete?
I do. I compete. My competition slowed down a little bit over the last couple of years. Just I've got a toddler at home, so things have slowed down. But yeah, I do compete. I'm actually the president of our local cowboy mounted shooting club. We just put on our Idaho state shoot just a couple weekends ago. But yeah, I love it. I've been shooting since 2010. I've got a fantastic partner in my horse, Stella, and she's just a bad mamma jamma. Like she's like the Iceman out there. She's a great, great partner. Won me a lot of money. We've gotten some great belt buckles, and yeah, it's a nice contrast to all of the tech things that I do. I feel like the Western lifestyle and the horses and all that stuff is such a nice contrast, and it's really just like my soul loves it. The horses have been a part of my life since I was little. Nobody in my family does horses. It's like the love of horses was just put in me from the beginning. So yeah, the mounted shooting thing came about in about 2010, and I can't put it down.
So that's a good place to end it, because we all need to remember to unplug, get away from this technology, and live life and do things we enjoy, right?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Courtney. Thank you for spending the time with us. Good luck, and you have great challenges ahead of you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on.
And thank you for joining us on Vetted by Mark Vetter. And we look forward to talking to you in the next few weeks.